Folks, we're going to get ourselves started here. We had a little snafu with the recording equipment, so we wanted to make sure that everything was working properly. Before we start, today we are going over the pension bill. In your packets, you should find House File 565. And we have Chair O'Driscoll is going to kick us off and walk us through his bill, and Chair O'Driscoll moves House File 565. And with that, Chair O'Driscoll, did you want to walk through the bill? Do you have folks that are going to help you through the bill? What would you prefer?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the State Government Finance Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to be with you today to talk about what is currently the 2017 Omnibus Pensions Bill. Madam Chair, my preference would be to have Ms. Lincheski and Ms. Barth from the Legislative Commission Office on Pensions and Retirement come up and do a quick overview of the bill. I will also let members know that we are in a continuous state of flux on the bill with different provisions as we work with the different plans and the different stakeholder groups to come to an equitable solution and rendition on this. If I might, Madam Chair, if you'll just indulge me for a moment, my hope is that we can get it out of committee here today and move it to the Ways and Means Committee, where it will be parked and on the counter side in the Senate, will be parked in the Finance Committee until we get such a global deal, if one is going to come, that we can move it from there and take action if that does come to fruition. So with that, Madam Chair, if we want to bring Ms. Lincheski and Ms. Barth forward to do maybe a 5 or 7 minute overview on the bill, and then there are some amendments, and we can proceed as we'd like to at that point. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your names for the record and who you represent.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Susan Lincheski, and I'm the Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement.
Good morning. My name is Rachel Barth. I'm the Deputy Director of the LCPR.
I will be going through the summary, which has been provided to you, I believe. There's a list of the source legislation at the start of the summary, and then we have a kind of a general overview of what's in the bill. I'll briefly go through that. The bill contains a number of benefit changes. Those are the bill eliminates augmentation, and augmentation is an automatic annual increase on the pension benefit of a former state or public employee. The employee earns a rate of return, 2% increase every year until the employee comes in and applies for the benefit and starts taking it at retirement age. That is called augmentation. It's like a COLA, but it's for former employees. The bill eliminates augmentation under all the plans effective 1/1/2018. In addition, the bill phases in the elimination of augmentation from the early retirement calculation, so this is all part of the theme of getting rid of augmentation, which is a benefit that most people don't understand, and as far as we can tell, it's not really very well communicated because it is a complicated concept, I guess. So we're removing augmentation in early retirement reduction, and that is being phased in over 5 years, beginning July 1, 2018 until July 1, 2023. We are also reducing the COLAs for two of the plans for MSRS, going from 2% to 1% for 5 years and then back to 1.5%, and also for Teachers Retirement Association, and the COLA will go from 2% to 1% for that plan. In addition, the bill delays the commencement of COLAs on pension benefits until normal retirement age. So currently under law, when a person retires early, they would start to get a COLA. The bill changes that, and now the COLA won't begin until the individual reaches normal retirement age, which is 66 for most people. The bill also reduces the rate of interest paid on refunds to former employees. So when a former employee decides they would like to take a refund of their employee contributions, they are paid interest on that, and that interest rate is being reduced from 4% to 3% as a cost-saving measure. Finally, the bill requires the Pension Commission to conduct a study on COLAs, and these are the post-retirement adjustments, to determine whether the methodology is appropriate and whether something should be done to change that, such as tie it to CPI an inflation measure or something like that. So that would be done by December 31 of 2020, and then the commission and the legislature would be able to take action on those recommendations during the 2021 legislative session. The bill, moving into the next category of changes in the bill does take make some changes to the actuarial assumptions under the plan, the most important being it reduces the rate of return from 8% to 7.5% for all the plans. In the case of Teachers Retirement Association, that decrease is actually going from 8.5% to 7.5%. 7.5% is viewed by the commission as being a more reasonable rate of return. And then the bill also resets the 30-year amortization period for all the plans, and the amortization period is the period over which the plans are expected to attain 100% funding. The period for all the plans will now extend to 2047. In addition, the bill increases the contribution rates for most of the plans, and those are set forth in the summary part as well as in the section by section, but in the summary, they begin on page 9, and I will just briefly go through those. For MSRS General, which is the large plan, the pension plan for MSRS, the rates, the member or employee contribution rates will be increased by 0.5% over 2 years, the employer contribution rate by 0.75% over 2 years. For the correctional plan, the member contribution rates will be increased by 0.5%. The employer contribution rates, as well as a new supplemental employer contribution, are being added. The regular employer contribution rates will increase by 1.55%. MSRS State Patrol Plan also will see increases. The member contribution will increase by 1% over 2 years, and the employer regular contribution by 1.5% over 2 years. This plan also has a new supplemental employer contribution that is being added and will continue to be paid until the plan reaches full funding. MSRS Unclassified, which is the defined contribution plan that's connected to the MSRS General Plan, the member employee or member or employee contribution rate is going to be set at 5.5% rather than increase along with the MSRS General member rate. So that's a change in the statute. It is currently tied to the member rate. The member rate is going up for the general plan, so it will be no longer tied to that. It will remain at 5.5% for the unclassified plan. Under para general is not going to see any employer or employee contribution increases, but under the police and fire plan, there will be member contribution increases of 1% over 2 years. And for employer contribution rate, that'll increase by 1.5% over 2 years. TRA also will have some contribution rate increases for member. The member employee rate will go up by 0.75% over 4 years, and the employer contribution rate by 1% over 4 years. St. Paul Teachers similarly will have a member contribution rate, but that will not be out until FY 2022, and that'll be by 0.25%. And then St. Paul, the employer contribution rate will increase by 2.5% over 4 years. In addition, the bill provides for two direct state aids. One is for the para police and fire in the amount of $4.5 million starting in 7/1/2017, and that'll be at that rate for 2 years, and then will increase to $9 million. In the third and the fourth and thereafter fiscal years. St. Paul Teachers will is provided with a $5 million annual direct state aid, and that will begin on July 1, 2017 also. The bill also makes a number of cleanup changes to existing provisions. It clarifies the combined service annuity provisions. It adds a new interest rate section so that they're not scattered throughout the statutes, so there's one place to look for interest rates, and those are paid on repayments, overpayments, those types of things, and then a number of conforming changes. Articles 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 are all administrative or technical changes that have been requested by the plans to bring the plan's operation in conformity with the statutory language. So I won't go into those in any detail, but they are spelled out in the section-by-section part of the summary. In Article 14, these are mostly changes dating back to the 2016 pension bill that was vetoed. So these are kind of a holdover from that time and will probably end up being replaced in the revisor's office by some of the new sections earlier in the bill. Article 15 deals with the Volunteer Firefighter Relief Associations. This is Chapter 424A. It makes a number of changes that have been recommended by the Volunteer Firefighter Working Group that's chaired by the State Auditor. Those were presented to the Pension Commission, and the Pension Commission adopted most of the recommended changes. Article 15, that's what we were just talking about, so that is all volunteer firefighter changes. Article 16 deals with MSRS administered plans, and the two most important provisions in that part of the bill deal with the unclassified plan, which is a grandfathering of the current factors for converting a lump sum or an account to an annuity. Those will be grandfathered for the next 3 years, so people won't have a decrease in their annuity were they to retire and take their benefit over the next 3 years. Within Article 16 as well are some changes to a group of employees that we've been referring to as the Fairview employees. This group dates back to 1996 when they were forced to change employment in connection with the spinoff of assets out of the University of Minnesota system. Those employees have been receiving a 5.5% annual increase, or 7.5% depending for the older employees. So those have been the augmentation rates for these employees, and those are being changed in the bill. They'll reduce to 4.5% right away, and then will phase out over the next 5 years. Article 17 deals with para-administered changes. Probably the most important of those deals with the statewide voluntary firefighter plan that's governed by para. That allows now groups to withdraw from the plan if they have a new volunteer firefighter or an existing volunteer firefighter association that they're transferring assets to. Article 18, again, is a number of other changes made to retirement benefits, kind of in a general sense. One of them is a maximum employer contribution to a laborer's plan is going to be permitted to go from $5,000 to $7,000 per year. Changes of that nature. And then Article 19 is the article that includes a number of provisions that are being provided for individuals or small groups. So this is in the case where there's been some plan error and employees are being allowed to change from one plan to another or to receive past service credit. And then finally, Article 20 is technical corrections, nothing very substantive there, mostly changes to remove references still to the Duluth teacher's plan and some other changes to language.
Chair O'Driscoll, I think what would be helpful at this point is you've got the 4A amendment. Let's just get the bill in its final order. I think that might help us a little bit. And
sure,
can you just briefly describe what that one does?
Sure, Madam Chair. The House and the Senate are under joint budget target resolutions right now, even though the provisions that were sent to the governor were vetoed, and the House and the Senate have not agreed to a change in those targets. And as a result, the $19 million that's identified in the bill for direct aid would violate the joint budget target agreements, and to avoid any kind of administrative or other kinds of issues with the bill moving forward, it has been suggested by the Ways and Means Committee Chair and Administrator that we remove those provisions from the bill if it moves to Ways and Means, and then when we get a global agreement, those would be a part of that that would be reintroduced at that time, again, just so we don't have any technical issues and having our bills be fiscally out of balance, which I know is important to making sure that we do that. So with that, Madam Chair, it's a procedural issue at this point to be able to comply with the joint resolutions. And so as a member of this committee, I do offer the 4A amendment and ask for members' approval for that.
Okay. Members, any questions to the 4A amendment? If not, all those in favor of the 4A amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The 4A amendment is adopted. And members, in your packet, you also have the 3A amendment, and this basically removes TRA from the bill. Members, questions to this amendment? I'm moving this amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor of the 3A amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The 3A amendment is adopted. Chair Driscoll, did you have any other comments that you wanted to make before we go to testifiers?
Madam Chair, I do want to just share a couple of items. This is still a work in progress. Senator Rosen, who is the chair of the Pensions Commission that you sit on, as well as the vice chair of this committee, Representative Vogel, sits on, and we have been working very diligently with information that's been coming in that's precipitated a number of the different changes that are in here. Number one, we had a mortality study that was done that has shown that people are living longer, healthier, and happier, which is great, which also means that the plans will be paying out to benefits to recipients for a longer period of time, which does give cause to have to do some adjustments to the plan. Also, the way that the bill stands today, fully recognizing that there is no budget target for this. However, we are looking at some options. Again, if we do get a global agreement with the governor and with the House and the Senate moving forward on budget bills, it is our intentions as well to push for a budget target for pensions that will match with what we ultimately come up with. So that may be something that members or others will testify on that may provide them some clarity as to the direction that we're planning on going at this point. So, again, I acknowledge that we do not have financing in here, and the way the bill technically reads right now, it would be absorbed by the agencies, which is not, I repeat, not the intention of the chair in the Senate, nor the vice chair myself from the House this year on that. We believe that we will need to have additional funds that are going to be introduced, which, again, that should provide some comfort for some of the stakeholder groups, as well as members on the committee that haven't maybe been as intimately involved with the process. Third thing that I'll mention, and we can go to testifiers, is that we continue to meet with stakeholder groups to try to find a way to get resolution on some of those areas where we're not quite aligned yet so that we can have a global agreement. And, Madam Chair, if I might, I've also suggested that if I can bring the 17 stakeholder groups together on this successfully, I may resign immediately from the legislature and pursue a career in negotiating world peace or something. That would be a little bit easier than a pensions bill. So with that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. Okay, well, I've got a group of testifiers that are on my list. I've got Ms. Blyle. You are first on the docket. After that, it's Ms. Hacking after that. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. I'm here today on behalf of a Public Employees Pension Coalition group of public employee unions and associations that came together at the beginning of session with the goal in mind to move a pension bill and funding forward this legislative session. The Public Employees Pension Coalition consists of AFSCME Council 5, AFSCME Council 65, AFSCME Chapter 5 Retirees, Communication Workers of America, Minnesota, State Council, Conservation Officers Association, Education Minnesota, Education Minnesota Retired, Middle Management Association, Minneapolis Committee of 13, Minneapolis Firefighters Local 82, the Minnesota AFL-CIO, the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, the Minnesota Government Engineering Council, the Minnesota Nurses Association, Minnesota Police Fraternal Association, Minnesota Professional Firefighters Association, Minnesota State College Faculty, Minnesota State Patrol Troopers Association, Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis, Retired Educators Association of Minnesota, SEIU Local 284, St. Paul Teachers Pension Group, and Teamsters Local 320. As you can see, it's a considerable number of organizations that have come together with hopes of moving a pension package with funding through the legislature. And I'd like to thank Representative O'Driscoll for continuing to move forward and work with all of us. But bottom line is we are going to need funding to achieve this goal. Our coalition continues to be united and will continue to work together for the betterment of our members and retirees. Public pensions affect 1 out of every 10 workers in Minnesota, and over 200,000 retired public employees who live in every county in Minnesota receive over $4.2 billion per year and $350 million per month in benefits. The $100 million Governor Dayton recommended in his budget is a very strong effort to fix pensions. Our group has strongly supported this and the funding for the pension bill. The Pension Commission bill has several elements, or had several elements of the funding and some of the policy pieces that Governor Dayton recommended. Some of the objectives that the Public Employees Pension Coalition has supported are achieved in the pension bill, and we look forward to working for more of those to be included to address the needs. There are still unresolved provisions in this pension bill, as I indicated, that cause many of our members concern. We hope these concerns can be resolved. One thing is clear to all the members of our group: a significant investment of new money into the pension plans of at least the magnitude that was recommended by Governor Dayton needs to be made. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, any questions for Ms. Blyle? Thank you, Ms. Blyle. Ms. Hacking? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Lori Hacking, Executive Director, Teachers Retirement.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Jay Stoffel, Deputy Executive Director at Teachers Retirement Association.
Thanks for the opportunity to testify. We appreciate the very hard work that Representative O'Driscoll, Senator Rosen, and the entire Pension Commission has engaged in to bring some financial stability to our systems in light of the experience study that Representative O'Driscoll referred to. So we're very grateful for that work. Minnesota has a very strong tradition of taking care of its pension plans when it hits rocky times and doing it in a deliberate and fairly efficient manner. So we think it's important that a bill proceed, a pension bill proceed this year, and we hope to be included in the bill, a TRA, at a later stage or reinserted. We look at this bill from a lens of a couple of different issues. One of them is trying to maintain the recruitment and retention value of pensions for teachers. We all know we're facing a shortage today, and we understand that pensions are an important feature to attracting and retaining teachers. Another important principle is that our board adopted when they looked at the solution to our financial problems, that is balance in the package, balance, shared sacrifice among employers, active employees, as well as retirees. We are concerned about this element of shared sacrifice right now, as the bill that emanated from LCPR is a bit lopsided in our opinion. About 86% of the sacrifice required to solve the problem is on actives and retirees. So we've engaged, we're trying to be flexible, engaged in some discussions with commission members to try to come to a better balance, so this would be a package that we could more fully support than we are able to do today. So while we prefer Terry's original package, we do understand that at least what's you're looking at, or will, what the commission has approved, does address the financial stability issue for TRA. It would restore us financially, and that is a very important goal. And we hope to address some of the issues relating to shared sacrifice in a better balanced manner as the bill moves forward.
Well, I think, Chair O'Driscoll has worked really hard on this issue. I know some of the concerns that we've had, Ms. Hacking and Mr. Stoffel, has been the issue of TRA being kind of held out as a special entity and not on the same lines. And I don't know, Chair O'Driscoll, can you kind of walk us through kind of that piece of it? I think it would be helpful for the members that don't serve on the Pension Commission to hear some of that information, if you would, please.
Well, Madam Chair, you are correct. There are a couple of different variations between how benefits are accrued between members of TRA and the other, I'll call two-plus major pension plans that the state has responsibility for. If you are covered by PERA, with the exception of police and fire, or MSRS, with the exception of state patrol, your annual accrual rate is 1.75% of salary per year times the number of years of service. Then that number is multiplied by your final 5 years' salary average to be able to calculate your benefit. That same process would happen with TRA, except it being 1.7 as the annual accrual rate, it would be 1.9. So there is a larger payout that would occur, which would cause the fund to have to put more dollars out there. That's probably one of the major factors that we're looking at. We also have some issues with augmentation that we are looking at that we think will help put the plan in a little bit more stable situation. One of the other things that the plan found concerning, the commission, I should say, found concerning was that if we didn't do something and we just kind of left things go status quo in 30 years, and I'll ask Ms. Hacking to tell me if I'm wrong on this, but we'd be right around somewhere around 36% fully funded. So we'd be one-third funded versus two-thirds, and therefore that's why we're looking at making something as drastic as we're looking at right now. Two worlds have collided at the same time, which is difficult. One isolated from the other, we could have probably had less impact on folks, but with the mortality study coming in, people living longer, healthier, and happier, and the State Board of Investment Executive Director, Mascal Perry, telling us that he does not believe long-term that 8.5% or even 8% is a viable rate of return. He's looking at something more around 7.2, 7.3, caused us to want to bring that rate of return down to 7.5%, more in what the reality of what the investment advisors are telling us. Both of those are causing all plans to show more of an underfunding at this point in the process, but given TRA's current state of affairs, it is magnified more with their situation than it might be for other plans that would have been closer to fully funded, somewhere in the 70% to 80% range. And then, of course, St. Paul teachers would experience that as well, where their funding ratio is not at that upper level, so it does skew the unfunded on that. So I don't know if that's what you were looking at, but it's a little bit of a background. And again, I would invite you to ask Ms. Hacking to clarify any of the statements that I made or to add additional.
Well, and even at the 7.5%, that's above what Mr. Mansko is suggesting. If he's at 7.2, 7.3, we're even above that. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair. But when you start getting into finance and different kinds of things, I can put people to sleep real quick if you want me to get into that today. But you're still within the standard deviation of that, so you could be a little bit higher than that, and some years a little bit lower. So we're still looking for the long-term averages on this because it's a fund that's created for into perpetuity.
Sure. And Ms. Hacking, can you talk to me a little bit about what kind of communications you have with your members about the fact that if you're looking at this projecting out that you'd be at 36% funded, and what kind of impact that would have on those that were left with what's remaining of the fund?
We have continually been communicating with our members through our newsletter on exactly that issue of our future financial status and preparing our stakeholder groups for cuts that the board has recommended. And Representative O'Driscoll is correct about the financial projections of the 37% range if we do nothing, and that is why our board came forward with a financial stability package to address those concerns. So we do think it's very important that action be taken, and that is why, you know, our board recommended some very significant cuts. The commission went a bit farther with those cuts, and we understand their thinking. So we do think this is serious. We've prepared our membership to understand that there will be cuts that will be needed. With respect to the accrual rate, I'd like to just make a point. Representative O'Driscoll is correct about we do have St. Paul teachers and TRA actually Both of the teacher plans have higher accrual rates for service, recent service. It's not for past service. In our case, it's after 2006. And in TRA's case, the contribution rate on employees was actually increased to pay for that increased accrual that occurred for us, like I said, in 2006. And right now, compared to the other funds, we have the highest employee contribution rate of 7.5. And I believe St. Paul is also, if they're not already at 7.5, they're very close to it for the employee rate. And that rate is the highest among the statewide plans for employees.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two other thoughts have occurred to me when Ms. Hacking was presenting her comments. Another difference, the way the statute currently reads, TRA retirees get a 2% COLA, where many of the other plans are at 1% or clearly below 2%. So, again, money going out without the ability in the long run to be able to fund those. Second is looking at rough numbers, dollars that we'd be looking at, 50% of the money that we're looking at needing to do something this year to stabilize all plans would be dedicated to the TRA process or to the TRA portion of this. And again, if I could just summarize, TRA is separate from St. Paul teachers. So over on this side, you got TRA here, you would have MSRS, MSRS State Patrol. You would also have St. Paul teachers. You would also have PERA general, and you would also have PERA police and fire. So all of these other plans would be about 50%, or TRA would be about 50% unto itself for new infusion of funds to be able to do that. So we're talking about something that is needing immediate attention for all the reasons mentioned, but I just thought that would be helpful as well for the groups to understand. Higher COLA, higher accrual rate, underfunded, 50% of the funds roughly would be going to TRA, the other 50% to the other five plus plans.
Great. Thank you. Members, any questions? Ms. Representative Olson.
I have a question for Ms. Hacking. So you said a little bit about we've talked about the teacher shortage. We're going to hear a teacher licensure bill on the floor later today talking about teacher shortage. And this conversation is relevant when we talk about pensions, what's really going on with teacher shortage. Can you talk a little bit more about how you could see, you talked about your communicating with your members, about cuts and about pensions. Can you speak a little bit more to how your members are reacting, how this relates to workforce and teachers in the future with what we're doing with this pension bill here?
Ms. Hacking.
Thank you. Yes, appreciate that question. Pensions are, I think, an important part of the compensation package that teachers look at. I think it's pretty well known that the compensation, wage levels, salary levels for teachers are low relative to comparably educated private sector workforce members. And I think the compensation that is available through benefits that they can get, such as pensions, are an important part of trying to counterbalance the relatively lower wage levels that are seen by teachers. So surveys show that pensions are an important recruitment tool. We're seeing a big increase in the awareness of pensions among younger workers. That's a relatively new development, I think a result of the financial decline we experienced a few years ago and the decline in the stock market. So younger workers, typically you categorize and say, oh, they don't care about their retirement. Well, surveys are not showing that. They do care about it, and they are attracted to a job because of the pension coverage that will be added. So we think that's sort of part of the equation that's important.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to just shine some light on this as well, and I don't dispute that what Ms. Hacking is saying is important when you look at an employment option and decide whether you're going to take that employment or not. A total benefits package is important. One of the things we can't lose sight of as well is if you are a college student wanting to enter the teaching profession and you are looking at $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 worth of student loan debt, and as a starting teacher you may make $35,000, $32,000, $28,000 depending upon, and I'm just throwing numbers out just to make a point here, depending upon which district you go to work in, you've got student loans that you have to pay, so you may be saying to yourself, boy, an incentive for me to get into here would be some relief up front to be able to make it more financially feasible for me to be able to get into that. And unfortunately, the tax bill that was vetoed by the governor did have a provision to do some loan forgiveness and loan credits for college students. It is my hope that if we move forward with the tax bill, that provision will be in there, because I think that that will also help not only teachers wanting to get into the profession or individuals going to the teaching profession, but others. And another thing might be that we need to, as a state, look at other incentives to bring folks into the teaching profession if we deem that as a state value and priority. And we have done that in the nursing home industry with other kind of loan forgiveness and things as we've seen shortages. So the legislature is not without precedent in looking at other areas. So I want members to know that there's a balance. It's not just pensions that people look at. There's also the front end, because the pension is paid at the end of the career. The student loans are paid, well, at the beginning or throughout your career.
Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think this could be to Representative O'Driscoll or really the testifiers from each division. But one of the concerns is the sustainability for the future, and as Representative O'Driscoll discussed was the study on the mortality and that people are living longer and whatnot. And I think my question is, those nearing retirement want to make sure that they get what they put into it. As far as new hires also want to make sure as they're making their contributions that when they near retirement that they too get what they put into it. What type of reforms have been done, perhaps maybe at the front end as you're hiring new employees, that will make sure we have the sustainability for the future long term?
Chair, just
go. Madam Chair, if I could probably talk to that globally, and then again I would invite either Mr. Stopper or Ms. Hacking to comment on it. On the front end, when individuals go in, their amount of contribution would be increasing. So if in the plan, regardless of which covered service you were in, you would be paying more. Everyone believes that, and it's an investment principle when we hear about saving for retirement. The more you save, the earlier you save, the more potential you have for growth and return on that. And so that is a strategy that we are looking at on this. Secondly, eliminating augmentation in the bill, through the bill that says if you've severed from public service, you're not you've chosen for whatever reason to separate from public service after 5 years, 10 years, and you are eligible for a benefit, that the public employment and the different public entities would not, in essence, continue to reward you for termination of service by providing augmentation of an increase of retirement benefit for a period of 2 years or 2% per year until you chose to draw your retirement. I know of no business that when you separate from them, they give you an ongoing legacy benefit like that. It just becomes problematic. I'll let Ms. Hacking maybe speak to that, but she says that when they talk to people about withdrawing their money, that is not even an issue that is on anyone's radar. She's testified to that in the past. As people work longer, increasing the average retirement age as in some careers, in some professions, in some service, that makes sense because those benefits are going to be paid out at a longer time. We've looked at implementing some reduced COLA when those COLAs go into effect if you choose to retire early. Again, that's an individual's choice of separation from service. So we have taken what we think are some reasonable steps that don't affect someone who's going to be a career public servant. If you're in for 30 years and draw your pension, well, then you're going to get your benefits. Interestingly enough, we are right now rewarding individuals who said, I no longer want to be in public service, by giving them, in some cases, 2% augmentation versus an individual who's retired after a 30-year career, a 1% COLA. Thank you, we're going to give you 1%. Thank you for leaving, we're going to give you 2%. It just seems to be a disconnect. So we're trying to bring that more in line with the realities of what the pension plans were designed to do, and that's to reward people who were going to be in public service. I don't know if that answers the extent of your questions, Representative Fenton, but those are serious considerations that the Pension Commission looked at that we thought don't affect career individuals.
Okay. Representative
Fenton? I think that answers my question right now. Thank you.
Representative Devon.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Driscoll. As you know, I was a teacher for 34 years. Started in 1973. First contract was $9,000 a year. Okay, and how many? We talked about 50%, and one goes for 50% in the TRA, and 50% in the other five, I think. What are the numbers of people in both? Do you have that number?
Chair Driscoll.
More than one and less than a million, Chair Detmer. I don't have the exact breakdowns. The plan directors are usually the ones who can give us that information. So since we have Ms. Hacking here, she probably could tell us what TRA is, and she might also have some additional insight as to rough numbers, what the other plans are. Certainly not putting her on the spot for that, but I bet she knows the TRA numbers.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Hacking.
Yeah, I can give you some perspective on that. Of the three statewide systems, MSRS is the smallest in terms of the numbers of employees who are covered, but they're still pretty large. TRA is right in the middle. We have about 81,000 active contributing members and a little over 60,000 retirees. So that gives you, some sense of our size. And then PARA is the largest in terms of the number of employees covered by their plans. And I don't know about specifically police and fire, which I believe is the one entity that is receiving or would receive some funding under the bill. But it's a smaller plan compared to the three larger statewide plans.
Chair Driscoll, did you have information to add?
Madam Chair, I'm looking at some information that was provided to me, and I can give you some specific numbers, but it's broken down. I need a little time to go through because there's also some financial stuff in here to be able to transcribe this. I don't know, Representative Detmer, if you need more detail than was provided on that, we can probably get you that, but I'm not on the witness stand here today at the testifier's table in a position to be able to necessarily go through and call out each of the different plans and their sub.
Yeah, Madam Chair, you could get that to me later. So
he knows where to find you.
Yeah.
Good. All right. I have no more questions at this point. Thank you. I have next on my list Mr. Carlson. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty today, and I'm also speaking today on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties and the League of Minnesota Cities. I'd like to indicate our gratitude to the author, Representative O'Driscoll, and the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement for putting together this bill. We support this bill, the provisions relating to PERA, for two reasons. One, it brings additional financial stability to an important benefit for our most important asset, our employees. Secondly, it makes no reductions in the benefits of our employees who work to normal retirement age. Let me repeat that. It makes no reduction in the benefits of our employees who work to normal retirement age. Contrary to the impression you may have gotten from prior testimony, the current cost of living increase for both the police and fire plan and the general plan within PERA is 1%. And it is scheduled to remain that way in perpetuity for the police and fire plan and to at least 2053, 2061, if you adopt the more conservative 7.5% investment return assumption for the general plan, 44 years from now, something that most employees will frankly never see. As a consequence, we think that the provisions eliminating the contribution trigger, which can only go in, or the COLA trigger, which can only go into effect when the plans are 90% funded for 2 years in a row, is a reasonable provision to the lead, since, again, for the police and fire plan, it will never happen. For the general plan, using the more conservative investment return assumption, it won't happen for 44 years under current law. Going on to the one other change that you probably heard concern about, and that's relating to augmentation for early retirement. By augmentation, I mean enhanced early retirement benefits above and beyond what normal actuarial standards would provide. The reductions would be for the fact that the pensions will be paid out for a longer time. This is a luxury that, frankly, most employees cannot afford, and consequently introduces a element of intergenerational inequity into the current plan. The current augmentation of early retirement benefits cost 0.6% of payroll, nearly 10% of the current employee contribution rate of 6.5%. Were that all the savings to go to their benefit, they would have more money to spend for ordinary living expenses, for college expenses for their children, or for their own savings. Right now, they're contributing to the benefit of the few employees who can retire early. Madam Chair, members, I just want to conclude with a few overviews of where the pension plan stands right now with regards to the general plan. It's only 72% funded. This plan, by the amortization date provided in the bill of 2047, will be fully funded. It's 3.5% of payroll deficient right now with a more conservative investment rate. Again, that is amortized by 2047. It also does provide for contribution increases on the police and fire plan, which will bring the employer's contribution to over a 90% increase from 2005, but we nevertheless support that. I'll also mention, while the contribution rate is not going up for the general plan, our contributions have increased 60% since 1997. We supported those increases because we value this benefit. I'll finally mention there's been, I think, perhaps a misimpression left in the members' mind that somehow our employers are paying less relative to their benefit for TRA. Up until recently, PERA was the highest contribution rate. TRA has surpassed them, but TRA has benefits that are 12% greater than MSRS or PERA. They have a 1.9% multiplier service credit versus the 1.7% that applies to PERA or MSRS. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Carlson, that was very helpful. Members, any questions? Chair O'Driscoll, any comments?
Madam Chair, a couple of thoughts have occurred to me in the discussions on this. Mr. Carlson testified that there were going to be significant increases related to police and fire and to also to the state patrol plan. And I want to just provide the members a little bit more background on this. The way that benefits work, if you are a teacher, county employee, a city employee, a school district employee, be you a teacher or a non-certified staff person, you're eligible for Social Security in addition to your pension benefit. When you get into police and fire, their payment benefits and their accrual rate is going to be different because they do not and are not eligible for Social Security. So they rely 100% solely on their state pension as a state trooper or police and fire. And so that is very important to manage and to keep that in the forefront of our minds when we're looking at this. And that's one of the reasons why the Pension Commission was open to that type of an increase because of the service that's provided. There are also some statutory limitations. If you're in state patrol, you must retire by the time you're age 60. So that kind of skews some of the retirement things. And so I think I can speak for just about everybody in Minnesota that we want to make sure that if there is nefarious things that are going on, that we have law enforcement there to deal with those and that we have correctional workers to retain and maintain our prisons, as well as firefighters and emergency response people when we need those. Those are core functions of government, and that's one of the reasons why the Pension Commission said we support and endorse those provisions within each of the plans as well. So, Madam Chair, I just thought that that was a little bit of background. And you may be saying, why are they not eligible for Social Security? Because those pension plans for police and fire were in existence before we offered Social Security here in the United States in 1935. That was one of the ways that we said, hey, if you're willing to take those riskier jobs, we're going to try to get you something in the way of a pension plan, or if you die, that you're in the line of duty, that your survivors are covered. So we're trying very hard to keep the spirit and intent alive of what the pension plans were designed to do.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. Representative Johnson, did you want to ask a question now or later?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we're at the closing part of the bill, then I will, but otherwise I'll hold till then.
Okay, great. Thank you. Ms. Berg? Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Jody Boer. I'm with Education Minnesota, and I just wanted to come before the committee to let you know that we have been part of the discussions from the beginning on the pension bill and trying to find solutions for it. We also appreciate very much Representative O'Driscoll, Senator Rosen's, and the entire Pension Commission's efforts to try and find a solution that we can all support. We just recently had a conversation yesterday with some of the stakeholders, and so we continue to be at the table. We have been part of the stakeholder group that supported the TRA proposal in the beginning, as well as the governor's recommendation to put funding in. I think you've heard from everyone, even though there may be some differences still going on and we're still having conversations. Everyone does agree and supports that we have to have funding. We support having a bill. We support having TRA in the bill. We supported the TRA proposal because we do believe that that was a more equitable shared sacrifice approach. We know that the LCPR proposal has some differences, and we have been continuing to have conversations with the authors of the bill and other stakeholders. You heard we're also part of the broad coalition around this issue, and so we just wanted to go on the record, let you know that's where we are. We continue to be at the table, willing to have conversations. Representative O'Driscoll and Senator Rosen know that. And so I would just echo the comments about the teacher shortage. We agree with that. We have, to Representative Olson's question, if I could address that just briefly. We have had calls and emails from members. The younger ones are paying attention. I think that's great that they are more engaged in this, as well as those who are near or getting close to retiring, wondering how and if these changes will impact them. And so those are real concerns and real questions that people have. And so, as I said, we support having a bill. We support having TRA as part of the overall bill, and we continue to be part of the conversation. So with that, thank you, Madam Chair, committee members.
Members, any questions? Thank you, Ms. Burr. Representative Johnson, did you want to ask now? Otherwise, it's up to Chair O'Driscoll.
No, I'd like to make some comments if this is the time. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I want to thank Representative Driscoll, too. I appreciate the work you put on this. I know it's a complicated issue with a lot of moving parts. But I would like to be clear on why I'm a no vote.
Oh, you know what, Representative Johnson? I'm going to pause you just for a second. I do need to verify. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I appreciate the work you put into it, and I realize it's a complicated issue, but we do have to deal with the bill that's before us, and I don't think the bill is sufficient to be passed. A couple of things that stand out. I realize that, you know, we need to get our pensions on a solid footing. I think we're all in agreement with that, and the governor certainly made a move from the get-go, putting $100 million up front to saying that's a priority for his administration. So the concerns I have, clearly there's no new state money, and I'm hoping, obviously, when the end comes, that this will be a part of the bill that we have before us. The other thing that bothers me is it's a seeming direction to move in a partisan nature in this pension bill. I know I've been around a while, as have you, pension bills have always been of a nonpartisan nature, and everyone's been kind of brought in together with an agreement on the direction to go. I would hate to see that be the way things move forward from this point on, where it's DFL versus Republican and how a pension bill should be put together. So whether it's due to the lack of balance that's been suggested in this bill regarding retirees or the lack of state aid money put in, I'm not sure. I haven't filed a pension bill as as closely as you, but I would strongly recommend that whatever you can do to take the partisan nature out of the bill would be fabulous, and obviously I want some money in this bill so that we have a strong pension system. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Driscoll.
Madam Chair, if there are no other questions or comments, I'll just go to my closing statements, and then we can go if that's your wishes.
Well, I just have a couple of comments. I think I appreciate all your work on getting all of the different plans together to have a package that can pass here through the legislature. I appreciate especially your work on the TRA piece of things. I think that it's been highlighted here that we need to make some changes to make sure that we're not at one-third funded versus two-thirds funded. I think that's a major problem, and I think when we are all having the conversation about teacher retention, if we are putting them into a position where when they get to their retirement and they have no hope of having any pension, I think that's problematic. So I do appreciate your work on doing that piece, and especially recognizing that it's not just about the pension plans. It's also about having a tax bill that provides relief to those that go in the teaching profession through loan forgiveness. I think that's very key. And all of these target dollars that we have for the tax bill as well as any other area, it's one big puzzle that helps us be a healthy state, and that includes having good teachers and retaining them as well. And that's not just the pension bill. That's also the tax bill as well. And so appreciate your work on that, and you've got the final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, 2 years ago, it was the House's opportunity to have the chair of the Pension Commission, and I was the chair of the Pension Commission. In 2015, we passed a unanimous bill out of the Minnesota House, to Representative Johnson's point, very bipartisanly. In 2016, we passed out of the legislature with all but four House and Senate members supporting the package. So we do have a history of being able to work together on it. Unfortunately, the bill was vetoed last year. And one of the things that we started seeing already in 2016 was the need to start doing some stabilization. To let you know that what we were looking at in 2016, those provisions that we would have been helpful, but when we got the hard and fast numbers that we're looking at this year, it dwarfs what we would have done last year with what we need to do this year. To that point, I think we have a golden opportunity. For those of you who remember the space shuttle program, you oftentimes hear about that window of opportunity when you can launch the shuttle, and it would have to be scrubbed at different times. My fear is that if we scrub the pension mission this year in 2017, you will not have a 2018 opportunity on this. It will be a 2019 opportunity. The reason for that is history is on our side. The legislature, when it was in bipartisan hands, the Senate and the Democrats, the House in the hands of the Republicans, did not want to put money forward to deal with, in a non-budget year, a pensions correction. Well, given that situation, if that history repeats itself, which the cost to cure now is an awful lot, the cost to cure in 2019 is going to be even more if we don't do things. This is our window of opportunity to get some things done. What could happen in 2019? Well, Governor Dayton said he's not going to be running for governor, so you're going to have a new person who we don't know who that's going to be, Democrat, Republican, what their thoughts and views are on retirements and plans. We're also going to have the House of Representatives sustain an election. Whether the Republicans maintain control or the Democrats gain control, we don't know the makeup of that legislature and where those individuals who are elected and what their thoughts are on pensions and how to proceed with those. What we do know is where the governor is. We do know that the House and the Senate are open to. Are they white hot? No, but they sure are warm on wanting to move to a resolution. I ask all members for their support on this so we don't lose this window of opportunity and all our plans to continue to go backwards because we are unable to come to a workable solution. My final comment is that not every member of the House and the Senate gets to carry the pretty puppies and the cute kitten bills. I can assure you that the pensions bill is not one of those pretty puppies and cute kitten bills that you get to carry. It will not lead the evening news as great things for humanity. It's the nuts and bolts things that some members have to deal with, and apparently I can't run quite fast enough, so I got that duty this session again. So, Madam Chair, with that, I ask for House File 565 as amended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Driscoll renews his motion that House File 565 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor of the bill as amended, please say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
The bill is adopted and on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. I just have one final comment, members. I understand we have a special guest here, Representative Omar. Who is this most important person with us today?
Ilwet Haseem, my youngest.
Haseem, well, welcome. Glad you're here today.
Yeah,
I hope your mom gets you a treat.
I this whole time now, she is.
Well, welcome to the committee. So, thank you. And members, with that, we are adjourned.